Punk Pulse Radio is invading your airwaves. Be on the lookout.
GeeksandGamers.com.
Hello, geeks and gamers. Welcome to Geek Pulse Radio Prime. This is an all-new format for our flagship show on the Geek Pulse Radio Network. I will be your host, Jeremy Griggs, and each week we will be diving into different topics within geek culture, giving you some very blunt and honest viewpoints. Some you may like, some you may hate. I will be inviting different guests from within the Geeks and Gamers community, some from outside of the community. We're going to have debates, we're going to have back and forth, and we're going to hopefully keep you very entertained. Before we move forward into this week's episode, it's important to appreciate the past in order to be successful in the future. I want to give a major shout out to three gentlemen that helped create Geek Pulse Radio: Chris Kiku Kubiak, Jonathan Youngblood, and Chris Clow. Three people that I have the utmost respect for, and without them, I'm not sure we would have Geek Pulse Radio right now. They all have my respect, and I would like everyone to follow their respective work. Here's where you can find them. On Twitter, you can find Chris Clow at Chris Clow. That's C-L-O-W. His podcast is based on Star Trek, and it is Discovery Debrief. You can also find his work. I think he has a weekly column on movies.com and several other websites. Jonathan Youngblood, you can find him on Twitter at Youngblood_95. And he is now the host of the Christian Cinephile podcast. He's also the lead admin for Movie Talk by Movie Fans on Facebook. That's a great group, and they have a lot of intense and fun discussions over there. And Chris Kiku Kubiak, you can find him at Darth Beebs, and you can find his work on YouTube, The Nerd Life with Chris Kiku Kubiak. So now that we have talked about the lead-in, now it's time to move forward into this week's episode. I'm happy you've all joined us, and this week I'm joined by someone that I talk to more than probably anyone, and that is my cousin and a member of the Geeks and Gamers community, Tommy Frazier. Tommy, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. Really excited to get into this discussion here today, so really exciting.
Yeah, so basically what we're going to do for this week's episode, for the first of the new format, is we're going to talk about what's always fun to talk about, and that's Star Wars. It's always the most relevant thing, but right now it's more relevant than ever. We have The Last Jedi that came out about a month ago. There's a lot of debate about this film. Obviously, we've had Battlefront in the past few months. We have Rebels is about to start back up in February. And then we have the Han Solo film that's scheduled for May. And there's just a lot that we can really dissect about the Star Wars community, Star Wars fandom, and where Star Wars stands. But what Tommy and I are going to focus on today is how we felt before The Last Jedi as big Star Wars fans and how we feel after The Last Jedi. I think it's going to be very interesting to kind of get into the psychology of that. Tommy is from California. He actually flew over here to Florida, where I'm from, for his graduation from the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. And we went and saw The Last Jedi together. And it was great because it was the first Geeks and Gamers meetup. So it was a really exciting night. But a lot has changed since that moment. And so I think that's going to be a really good discussion for everyone. So I'm going to let Tommy start it off, and I want him to kind of get into, I can't remember how many times he saw The Force Awakens. He saw it a lot. And
yeah, it was 12.
12 times in theaters. Yeah. I only saw it 5. So 12 times. That's crazy. That broke my record for The Dark Knight Rises. I saw The Dark Knight Rises 11 times. And so you
Oh, really?
DFA 12, and that pisses me off. But
well, that was my plan with The Last Jedi too, but it didn't turn out that way.
Now, all right, so I want you to get into how you felt. What was your excitement level before The Last Jedi? And you can start at any point. If you want to start right after TFA, however you want to do it, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, how do you really qualify that? How do you put that into words? I don't know, because we had a 2-year buildup to The Force Awakens. You know, all the marketing, everything coming out, JJ's on board. The excitement level was off the charts. And then we get into the movie, and I remember watching the movie the first time and just being overwhelmed all at once because we had Star Wars again, but really falling in love with it immediately.
And this is TFA, correct?
This is TFA, yeah, right.
Okay.
So with regard to, you know, what the excitement level was after that movie, I mean, it was off the charts because we got introduced to so many new great characters, so much potential in that world that was created. And there's never been another film that had that much pressure on it. So that's what made it even more special. So coming off of that, you know, the excitement was just unbelievable. I mean, where is this going to go? Who are Rey's parents? What's going to happen with, you know, Kylo Ren and
all those theories,
Luke?
Man. All
yeah.
Those theories.
The last shot with Luke, you know, it's like, oh, what's going to be said there? What's that moment look like? Yep. You know, here's Luke after 30 plus years. So it was, you know, it was off the charts really with regard to excitement. But, you know, we had the 2 year build up to The Last Jedi. We had the Rogue One film in there, and some people are down on that. I know I enjoyed that more than you.
Yeah, you definitely enjoyed it more than me. I don't hate the movie, by the way. I just I don't want to get too far into that, but I didn't hate the movie, but you definitely like it more than me.
Yeah. So it was a good stopgap. You know, I guess that's my point there. It gave a little Star Wars. It gave us the amazing Vader moment. You know, one of the greatest moments in cinematic history to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So we had that, but immediately our focus turned to The Last Jedi. And it's like, all right. And I remember you and I had this conversation shortly after Rogue One was out of theaters. It's like, okay, dude, in a few months, we get The Last Jedi. Like, we're going to see what happens with Rey. We're going to see what happens with Kylo Ren. Like, that's what I want to see. That's what I want to know. Where's that going? And then, you know, the whole build up, the anticipation of the trip, you know, coming out to Pensacola, that was huge. That was a cross country trip for the movie. And we put together a large viewing with the community, which was really cool. So there was a lot of build there, the anticipation, the swell. I don't think it really could have gotten any higher for me. So I admittedly came into this film with incredible expectations. And hopes more than anything, I guess I would say, about what had been created and where it could go. And then we were hearing in the news about how amazing the story was, how amazing Rian Johnson was. And then, you know, we get the screener releases and we get the media starting to talk about it. And we start hearing about how he just killed it. He knocked it out of the park. It's amazing. And the critic reviews start coming out. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, that takes things and it just ratchets it up a notch. And we're like, dude, I can't process what this movie could possibly be. So it just takes it up another level.
The Dark Knight comparisons. Remember the first time we played Crate on Battlefront 2? Like, blown away. We were like little kids on Christmas Day when we played Crate for the first time. And we kept quitting matches just so we could start it over. If it's not Crate, I'm not fucking playing this game.
Yeah.
Crate was so beautiful. And it is a beautiful map.
Yeah, it absolutely. And speaking of Crate, I mean, you know, I just, the ATM sixes, I mean, things like that, just in the marketing that we were exposed to, just drove things up even that much more. And I remember when we did play that map the first time, or when I played that map the first time, you guys had already played it, that you all went and followed the objective and went into the hangar there. And I was hanging out outside, walking around the ATM sixes looking.
We're like, where are you at? You're like, dude, this map is beautiful. Getting our ass kicked. Get in here.
So just everything, you know, a lot of things we hadn't seen before, the cinematography, the beauty of Crate and just the way everything was presented to us just gave us something. It gave us the idea that we were going to see something a little different, but we had the promise, the underlying promise of, okay, this story is still intact because all the reviews are so good. Like, this must be incredible. Mm-hmm. So that's what we went in. That's how we went into that movie. So, yeah. So between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, that's kind of where I was as far as anticipation level.
Yeah. And I mirror a lot of what you said. I remember just the feeling I had walking out of The Force Awakens for the first time and just being so blown away at the possibilities. Nothing upset me in The Force Awakens at all. Everything that happened, all of the development, The Force Awakens, I loved how we knew all of the characters even before we saw the movie. Like, they had done such a good job of marketing that. So you already felt so connected to this new world of Star Wars. And so, yeah, walking out of the theater with all the possibilities of what we could see from Luke and where Kylo Ren could go, because you and I both agree Kylo Ren's arc in The Force Awakens is nothing short of brilliant. And the possibilities that were presented in that movie for him were just, it was enormous. And so, yeah, Battlefront 2 played a huge part into my excitement. I know Battlefront 2 is a problematic game, and I'm not going to, you know, I don't think either one of us are willing to gloss over that. We both acknowledge that it's a really... It's more or less from a business standpoint and not necessarily from a gameplay standpoint. The campaign's not great by any means, but it's not terrible either. Mm-hmm. But the multiplayer is fantastic. But the business model, the sales, it's pretty bad. But for us, speaking just specifically to us, I know how much that game helped with our anticipation going into The Last Jedi. And so then we, you know, we see the film. Expectations are enormous. Like I said, I remember Scott Mendelson from Forbes basically called the Last Jedi the Dark Knight of Star Wars movies, which is the highest honor I can put on any movie. Because I do think The Dark Knight is a transcendent film and will always be considered that. And so when you start throwing those comparisons, the critic scores, just out of this world, everything seemed perfect. And we saw the movie. We both walked away from the movie pretty happy. I was a lot happier than you on that initial, like when we walked out and you're like, I don't know how I feel. And I'm like, dude, I loved it. And you're like, I mean, something felt weird to me, but I did like it, you know, but you were like, something felt weird to me. And, you know, here we are now. I've seen it. How many times have you seen it?
I just saw it for the fifth time last night. And, you know, my opinions really didn't change much. I've pretty much solidified my opinion on this film at this point. But, you know, I'm getting to the point, and I think we'll talk about this in a little bit, where I can start to enjoy it for really what it is, because there was so much we had to process, and which is what we're talking about now. But, yeah, it was three times that opening weekend, though. I mean, you and I saw it twice, and then I came back home.
No, we saw it three times, didn't we?
Did we? Oh, yeah, it was three times.
We saw it three times opening weekend.
Yeah, and then I saw it the fourth time that Monday, and then after that. So, which is unusual because, I mean, usually with a Star Wars film, I'm in the theater every few days, if I can be, or at least every weekend. And the last time, before last night, the last time I had seen it was Monday after opening, which kind of tells you something. But yeah, when we walked out of the theater, we were in a little bit different place, but we did the reaction video for the group, which was cool, and everybody was there. And I think that the same thing I experienced last night is sort of the same thing I experienced on opening night and when we did that reaction video. Because walking home from the theater last night, I told my wife, yeah, you know, I don't dislike the movie, I guess. Like, I really like parts of it. And I started talking about, you know, the moment with Luke, you know, the crate in general, you know, the development of Poe Dameron, all those things that were sticking with me. And when I thought back, I'm thinking, why is that? It's because the whole, you know, end of the movie, the third act, is really where the money is there, because you get so lost in other parts of the movie that doesn't really stick with you when you do a reaction video outside the theater. And that's where we were.
Right.
And it was just kind of like, mind blown. We didn't expect any of that stuff to happen with Rey or Luke, Rey and Kylo Ren. So we were still processing that, and that's where we were. But yeah, we can probably talk about, like, during the movie, some of our reactions as well.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I can't remember what scene it was. Maybe you remember there at one point I leaned over to you and I'm like, dude, they are killing it. This is incredible. What do you remember what scene that was?
I don't remember what scene it was.
I think it was Rey. I think it was the throne room scene.
Yeah, it might've been, I don't think it was then actually, because if it was then I probably would have been emotionally on board with you. And I remember what, I don't remember the scene, but what sticks out to me was the way I felt in that moment, which was, I'm not there yet, and that makes me feel bad because I wanted to be, and I wasn't, and I was like, what's wrong with me? Right. So that's where I was. And it, for me, like, it started with the lightsaber toss. You know, when he tossed the lightsaber over his shoulder, that's not what I wanted right there.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly in the theater sitting there and thinking, oh crap, I don't think I like that. And I don't think I like this. And then the tone, I started to become aware of the tone of the movie. And that's when, you know, during the whole scene with Encanto Bite, with Finn and Rose, the whole thing. Well, you, I was very,
you didn't really like the Poe Hux deal in the beginning either. That
I didn't know. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. That also took me out. And I rewatched that last night, really paying particular attention to that. And I think the comedy is just off right there. I think it, I see what they were going for, what Rian Johnson was going for. And I can appreciate infusing a little comedy there, but I don't know if it's the delivery, if it's the execution of the lines, if it's the timing, but that opening scene has the potential to be one of the most powerful opening scenes we've seen in a Star Wars film, you know, outside of like episode 3. Which I'm sure you'll get a lot of reaction out of the community, but
we're both prequel defenders. So me probably a little more than Tommy, but we're both prequel defenders. So go ahead.
You can't objectively argue that the intro to episode 3 is nothing short of brilliant.
Oh, so
I mean,
good.
It's incredible. The music, what's going on, the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin at that time. I mean, outside of Hayden Christensen as an actor, but, you know, so, I forgot where I was. What were we talking about?
We were talking about how the tone, the opening of The Last Jedi and how it had the potential to be one of the best.
Oh, yeah. Openings. So right there, you've got Poe, you know, coming in. And this is the first time we've seen Poe. There's a threat to the Rebel base. We're not sure what's going on. We see the dreadnought for the first time. Oh, my God, what is that? And right there in that moment, the comedy just felt like it was off. It didn't feel like it landed. I'll get more specific on that. Actually, it seemed like it just went a joke or two too far. I mean, I'm fine with the, you know, holding for Hux thing to stall a little time, but it just dragged on a bit too far for me personally. And that's what took me out of it, you know, mentally when I was watching the movie. So, but that the entire opening scene is brilliant for Poe's character. It's emotional when they charge the bombs and they drop the bombs, and then, you know, Rose's sister Paige dies. The whole thing lands, and you see what sacrifice really looks like for the rebels, or for the rebellion, resistance at this time they're calling themselves. So I just felt like that was the only kind of mark on that opening scene. And that's what initially made me aware of it.
We've discussed this before. I mean, I'm okay with that whole scene with Hux and Poe. I understand why it wouldn't land for everyone. And a lot of people have had problems with it. For me, I was fine with it. It was funny. It's funny. I've only seen the movie 3 times, which is a problem in its own, because my goal was to at least see this movie like 10 times, and I don't really have desire to see it again. But yeah, I liked that scene. I liked the opening. I have to say, I don't know where the movie really starts falling apart for me. That's a question I haven't really asked myself, as to where does it start falling apart. And I don't really know the answer right now. I do know that it eventually does, but the movie is full of highs and lows for me, and that's the problem. Because, I mean, it's well documented at this point. Probably anyone that's listening to this podcast has seen my roller coaster of YouTube videos on this movie and how initially I loved it, and then I was like, I like it. And then even how I was talking about the movie in the Facebook group, people were starting to say, like, you don't like this movie, Jeremy. I'm like, yes, I do. Yes, I do. And they're like, we can tell you don't like it. Stop lying to yourself. And, you know, ultimately through just really thinking and dissecting, I did come to the conclusion that I don't like this as a Star Wars movie. I do think it's a really good sci-fi movie in its own right. And if it was isolated, if it had no impact on the past or the future of Star Wars, if this was just like a standalone one-off movie, I think this would be a really, really entertaining film. But I don't like how it makes me feel about the end of Return of the Jedi. I don't like how it makes me feel about the end of The Force Awakens. I don't like how it makes me feel about Kylo killing Han. Because I'm like, you did it for Snoke, but you fucking killed Snoke. So it's like, why did you really kill this? Like, why? What was the ramifications to that? I don't like how it makes me feel about everything that's happened before it. And it makes me worry about what's going to come after it. And that's my biggest problem with it. Again, it's hard to really, that's why I'm struggling with the movie so much, because again, it's real easy to kind of watch that movie and be entertained. And a lot of the moments that happen right in front of you are really incredible. And it's a beautifully shot movie. And it's the acting is phenomenal in the movie. I mean, it's not like a objectively bad movie or anything like that. It's not that, but it's just how it makes me feel as a Star Wars fan. And I think that that's a growing concern within the Star Wars community, that a lot of fans are just not happy with this movie for the most part. And that's kind of what we're wanting to get into with this discussion. At the meat of this discussion is, how do you feel about Star Wars now that we are beyond The Last Jedi? How is it impacting you? And I kind of just touched onto that a little bit, but I don't like it. It does hurt the Return of the Jedi ending for me. It does hurt that scene on Endor when they're all happy and they're all smiling and Luke is, you know, successfully turned Vader and Han and Leia sitting there smiling. When I watched The Force Awakens, a small part of me didn't like that Han and Leia were not together, but I was okay with it because I'm like, hey, it's for a reason. You know, there's a reason why we're doing this. This is going to help Kylo's arc. And so I'm on board with it. So I'm going to eliminate what I wanted to see as a fan and just appreciate what they're trying to do from a story standpoint. But then we move into The Last Jedi and I'm like, I don't really understand why Han and Leia had to be separated. I don't understand why he had to die. Because Kylo clearly, don't tell me it was a split second decision that he had to turn on Snoke. This is clearly something that he's had plotted out for a while, because Snoke's too fucking powerful for you just to have a split second decision to go, hey, I'm going to kill this guy. Like, you clearly have had this in your mind for a while, and it's taken a lot of preparation and time. And I just don't really get it. And maybe again, I'll leave it open, but maybe he needed to kill Han in order to put him in the place where he needed to be powerful enough to kill Snoke. I mean, I'm willing to acknowledge that and hope that is a possibility, and maybe we'll find that out. But as it stands right now, my excitement level for Star Wars moving forward has been completely gutted by The Last Jedi. And I don't like that feeling. I don't want to dislike Star Wars. I don't want to not be excited and optimistic. I don't want to be like this at all.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm struggling with it the most. And so how about you? Where are you at in that
respect? Yeah. I mean, to comment on a few things you said as you were talking, I was actually thinking about this. And I thought about this a lot last night with, it's going to sound like I'm going off on a tangent here, but bear with me.
Hey, that's what this show's for, man.
Yeah. the Mary Poppins, moment with Leia. I was watching that and you had a much bigger problem with that when you first saw it than I did. I was like, well, she's a Skywalker, and I really bought into that like powerful, moment. But the more I watch it, the more I don't like it. And it's just really weird and comical even. There's so many holes in it, you know, and even how they recover her, you know, everybody's just standing by a door and it opens and they don't get sucked into space. It's just really weird. It's not consistent with what we've seen in other Star Wars films with bay doors slamming shut because the shields go down and, you know, all that stuff. But in any event, I started wondering, well, my wife asked me on the walk home, she said, well, I thought they were going to kill Leia and give her like a big going out. I said, well, yeah, I mean, they would have, but they didn't, of course, know Carrie Fisher was going to pass away. And we all thought that too, in the moment where she got sucked out of the bridge. But obviously she was going to be a huge part of episode 9. And I feel like probably that's what I'm interested to see how they address that, because I feel like that was going to be part of Kylo's arc, where because he killed Han, but he hesitated to pull the trigger on Leia. He thought Leia was dead. So he got the power to kill Snoke. He mustered the energy, the power of the Force to kill Snoke. But somehow I feel like that was going to come back. That was going to close that loop with her being alive and something about the light in him. Somehow, whatever his end was going to be tied around Leia. And we're not going to see that. And I'm curious to know, that makes me concerned to your point with regard to how they're going to handle Star Wars going forward. You know, I'm not real super happy with a lot of the direction right now. So to not have what seems to me to be a huge piece of the puzzle is even more concerning, because now there may be holes in what they had planned. Maybe that's opportunity for, you know, when JJ comes in and directs things a little differently. I mean, we know about JJ's, you know, ability to direct actors and get the best character performances possible out of them. So that's really helpful. That's really exciting. I'm tremendously excited that JJ's coming back. If JJ wasn't coming back, I would be
Could you imagine if Trevorrow was still on this project?
If Trevorrow was still on the project, I would be on all time low right now. I would be so concerned. The only thing that gives me hope is that, you know, JJ's involved and I know his talent. I know his track record. I'm a huge JJ fan supporter. And if anybody has the ability to do it, it's JJ. So that gives us at least hope of what we could see. I'm concerned about, you know, the direction with Finn's character. I love Finn's character in The Force Awakens. He was a big, bold, over-the-top, dynamic character. He commanded
bleeding
the screen.
Bleeding charisma in The Force Awakens.
Amazing. John Boyega slayed it in that movie. And then we get, you know, emo Finn or whatever you want to call him in The Last Jedi. And he's just noticeably, you cannot watch those two movies back to back. You cannot objectively watch them and say that is the same character performance and, or that is what I expect that character's arc to look like with regard to how he emotes in moments. He just is so subdued. It's like Finn at a 6. And it's noticeable. I noticed the first time I watched the movie. He's not big, bold, over the top. His comedy timing is off. It doesn't land. And then that hurts his first meeting with Rose even, which starts off pretty good.
It did start off good.
Yeah, with her being mesmerized by meeting a Resistance character. But it falls off really quickly because the character, I just don't buy it. You know, they're finishing each other's sentences. You know, Finn is now concerned with, you know, this side mission in the casino and getting distracted by the pretty colors when the thing that he's been most obsessed with the entire time is Rey is still in danger.
Dude, he was in a coma for like forever. And the first words, where's Rey?
Yeah.
And then,
it doesn't fit, man. It just doesn't fit.
It doesn't. And you know, let's go ahead and talk about the obvious and the character that everyone hates, and that's Rose Tico. Yeah. And let me preface what we're gonna say here. Kelly Marie Tran seems like a genuine sweet person. She seems like a wonderful human being, and mm-hmm. it kind of sucks that she's been put into this situation that. You know, she's a meme and people are destroying her all over the place. I don't enjoy that aspect of it at all, because she does seem like a genuinely sweet person. And, you know, we all seen how the Star Wars fandom and the spotlight can really hurt people, like Jake Lloyd from, you know, the prequels and things like that. Rose is, and I blame Disney straight up for the fact that they created a character that had no business being in this film as a reason to, I guess, over-diversify this already diverse cast. And again, if you can bring diversity into a story, I don't know of any normal human being that's not going to be all for diversity as long as it complements the story. My right. problem is, don't bring that shit into Star Wars and create some stupid side mission that literally does not help this film at all. The only reason Canto Bight is there is to push social agendas, anti-capitalism from Disney, which is laughable, you know, animal rights, which, okay, I mean, I'm a huge animal person, as you are. We both love our dogs. Other day we were comparing whose dog is fucking cuter, because that's what we do. We love our dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't care about some stupid, irrelevant animal rights message in my Star Wars movie, especially when it's not complimenting the movie.
Yeah.
And Rose Tico, she just was so bad in this movie. Kelly Marie Tran is not a bad actress. Rose was a bad character. She was an all-time horrible character. Literally did nothing to improve this movie. It only hurt the movie. That is the fault of the filmmakers and the studio that wanted to force this into it. It's not the fault of the actress, and hopefully she doesn't carry this stain around for the rest of her career. But yeah, I hate Rose. I can't stand that character. I can't stand her terrible lines. I can't stand that she took Finn's golden moment from him, a moment that he would... Again, with all the problems, and I said this in my most recent YouTube video, I mean, there are moments like the Luke Skywalker scene, like if Luke would have been there on Krait, it would have redeemed a lot of my problems, but the fact that it was projection really just pisses me off. And for all of the problems that Canto Bight and Rose and Finn created in this movie with their subplot that was irrelevant, if Finn could have went out like that, that would have been fucking awesome. Like, mm-hmm. that would have been an all-time great moment. And it would have been heroic, and it would have planted him in Star Wars history as having one of the great moments. And I felt emotional during that scene. And then all of a sudden, here comes Rose to, you know, knock him out of the way, and let's have the worst kiss of all time while there are AT-M6s literally feet from us. Yeah. It's so stupid.
And the door is being blown up. The thing that Finn almost just tried to give his life for, and is still in that state of mind of giving his life for this, so that the First Order doesn't win and kill his friends, and now he's just getting kissed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and that's another problem with this movie is, again, unfortunately, you have to preface what you when you talk about these things, because if not, then you're automatically labeled something in 2018. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm someone who has a daughter, a 12-year-old daughter. My favorite movie of the year is it's either number one or number two, and that's Wonder Woman. And I know you loved Wonder Woman. Fantastic movie.
Absolutely.
Fucking amazing movie.
Yeah, and I didn't think I was gonna like it because of either. Batman v Superman.
Yeah,
whole nine yards. Like, that was really low expectations movie. Loved it because it's great. Because it is great.
Right. It really is. It's truly great, and it's probably we're not gonna go on a Wonder Woman, you know, love fest here. But I mean, Wonder Woman I'm qualifying what I'm gonna get into.
Yeah.
But Wonder Woman to me is as close to the Christopher Reeve Superman feel that I've seen, and I hold those movies in the highest regard.
Right.
So I don't have a problem with women in movies. I don't, Tommy doesn't. We've grown up together. We know how each other feels about this. But what we have a problem with, and I'm not going to speak completely for Tommy. I'll let him say his piece. But how I feel and how a lot of people are feeling is there is this concerted effort on the part of Lucasfilm and Disney to really push females into Star Wars. And it's like, that's fine. When Daisy Ridley was cast as Rey, when it was announced she was the lead character, I'm not sure anybody that's not a complete moron was unhappy with that. Mm-hmm. And then you watch The Force Awakens, and Daisy Ridley is phenomenal. She's an amazing ambassador for Star Wars. When she does interviews, she just lights up a room. She's a wonderful human being, and I'm totally okay with her being the lead. But when you start seeing it happen over and over again, so you had, you had The Force Awakens female lead, then you had Rogue One female lead, which that's one of my problems with it, is I thought that Jyn Erso hurt the movie. You felt that way as strongly as I did?
Not as strongly, no. I understand the criticisms, and I think that there's definitely a lot of moments where she feels flat and or robotic at times, but then others draw me in more. So yeah. I think she was serviceable in the role, and it didn't really distract me.
Yeah, and then we get into Battlefront 2, which the campaign has the female lead. And again, I ended up really, really liking Iden. I really enjoyed her. I thought her arc in the campaign was I don't know if everybody's played that. I won't go into any real spoilers or anything, but I thought Iden's arc was great, and I ended up really liking her. She was really cool. So really no problem with that, but it's like, then you get into The Last Jedi, and it's like all female resistance versus an all white male, you know, First Order. And it's like, what type of subtle imagery are you trying to create here? Because I don't really like, just stop, just make a movie, give it the proper pieces it needs to be good. Just try to blend it better and don't make it so in your face. That's my only issue, is just, it felt like The Last Jedi was trying just as hard to create a social message as it was trying to create a good Star Wars movie. And that's where you start having these two things clash together. And it's like, why are you so focused on pushing a social message? Why not just make a good movie? That's my problem.
Agree. And you know, it's when you start to notice these things, you know, it is what it is. The reason for bringing them up is to support the idea that, you know, Disney has this push. It seems that Lucasfilm has this push. So that's where you circle back to the issue with Rose. And it's not that, you know, they're just rolling out another female out there. That's not it at all, because, you know, female characters like Iden, things like that, when they support the story and they're good for Star Wars and it makes sense and it's good storytelling, then it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
That's all we want. It's just good storytelling. Give me a good story. Like we said initially, the meeting between Rose and Finn, that was good. You know, it was believable and things like that. Where it falls off the tracks is when the story starts to get unbelievable. And then the mission they go on is pretty stupid. And then Canto Bight as a whole, like, just is poorly executed. And every line Rose has from there on out just gets worse and worse and worse.
Preachy bullshit.
That's all it is. And
what was that line on Canto Bight? Like,
I'd like to put my fist through this whole beautiful stupid city or something like that,
like
loosely quoted. It really was just, it, you're like, okay, well, that's kind of what are we talking about,
right? What's going standing on a fucking balcony in a casino planet that we've never heard of, and meanwhile the galaxy is at war. Rey is training on an island with Luke. We don't know what's going on there. They're having four Skype calls that we're fascinated with. And you motherfuckers are just standing here in the middle of a mission, just looking out at a balcony, criticizing capitalism. What?
Yeah. I think that after watching it last night, at the end, Luke's line at the end, where he talks about the resistance is reborn, and it looks at Poe and the war has just begun, and it looks at Finn. I am curious, we talk about what Star Wars has in the, hold in the future. I'm curious as to whether this entire arc in The Last Jedi for Finn was supposed to make him, turn him from defected stormtrooper, found resistance hero into an actual, general and make him want for a cause. But if that's what they were trying to do, okay, I can understand that from a big picture aspect, but it was just poorly executed because the little issues they had going on there didn't come across. There was no emotional connection. You're more concerned about you're still worried about Rey, and then Finn's behaviors don't fit, getting distracted by how pretty the city is. Meanwhile, you're trying to, get this mission completed so your friends don't die. Like, those two things just don't coexist. So I felt like there needed to be more weight. There needed to be something, like there needed to be consequence to their mission, and it just wasn't. Something more than what they saw. So that was my big problem with it. Finn's character development was wrapped up into that. And everybody wanted to see Finn with Phasma. Everybody wanted to see that come to some sort of conclusion, have a storyline there. There's a lot of potential there that was set up in The Force Awakens and not followed through on here. And I think that's why a lot of fans are feeling kind of let down and betrayed by it, is because it seems like a lot of these things that we were almost promised in The Force Awakens, they weren't developed. They weren't delivered on here. And that really sucks, with all of the potential that there was there.
Well, I want to, you brought up a good point I want to touch on real quick, and that is Phasma. That's a great point. So when we're talking about, this whole female push to by the marketing and by the movies.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Clearly, we're not anti-female, because I wanted to see more Phasma. Would you have Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones, one of the most badass women on the planet, and you just basically have treated her like a complete side piece? Like, all she was something to sell toys, and me and you bought plenty of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I Captain Phasma, when I first saw the first images of Captain Phasma, and I think it was Entertainment Weekly, I was like, holy shit. And then I found out it was Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
amazing.
Whoa. Okay. I am so in. Went I've got like one, I don't know, I've probably got like 7 or 8 Phasma, toys. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited for her. And she's like so terrible in The Force Awakens. I mean, she's so bad. She's so bad. But I was like, all right, cool, that's fine. We're gonna get redemption for Phasma in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And literally we don't even see her for like the first 2 hours. Like, she's nowhere. And then we finally see her, and Finn whips her ass and she's dead. And we're like,
yeah.
What?
It was, like,
you want to push this female thing? Okay, you got one of the most badass females on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, again, if you're telling me you don't have time because of the story, I'm not going to complain. But if you have enough time to create a 30-minute side mission for Canto Bight that does not complement the story, then you had all the time in the world to really develop that Phasma Finn arc. We could have gotten a lot more out of Phasma. Now, I haven't read the Phasma book, but I've heard that there's some stuff that kind of opens up a little more as to why that last shot of her where you can see her eye and her mask was damaged. And I guess there's some kind of symbolism that was supposed to mean. And that's kind of what it kind of seems like Disney's always doing. Like, hey, buy the book. Buy the book if you want to know more. Like, how about you just tell me a fucking story that doesn't require extra pieces to make it better. But Phasma was just, it's such a disappointing character overall, and it's just really frustrating. But now,
wouldn't it have been so much cooler, just while we're on that topic, to see Finn somehow, shape or form end up having to go into like a stormtrooper training camp or something and rescue some of his quote unquote brothers and sisters that are trapped, have been kidnapped from their families, and lead them into the resistance and then have a big face off with Phasma. I mean, wouldn't that be cooler? Rose there or not? I mean, if you want a diversity and shoehorn Rose in, tag her along on that mission. I'd much rather see that. But, you know, there again, you get into, there really isn't a reason to shoehorn him in a female sidekick of any race or religion, because he just didn't need it. He just needed to develop in the story that was laid out and presented to him. He was orphaned, brought into the First Order, trained as a stormtrooper, and in the Force Awakens, we get a sense that there's some sort of history between those two, and we never get to see it go, you know, all the way through. It never pays off.
Super cheap. Yeah. And that's one thing I've kind of said about this movie that kind of really bothers me, is there's a lot of cheap moments that on the surface, they seem really cool, but when you really start thinking about them, they come off really cheap. The Rey, Snoke, Kylo situation in the throne room in the moment seems super cool, and then 10 seconds later, they're back to fighting like nothing happened. It's like, what? Like, so really, what really changed in the movie outside of a shock kill of Snoke? Nothing really, because it's still Rey versus Kylo, and the Luke scene on Crait, again, You were in the theater with me. I mean, I was blown away by that the first time I saw it. But then you just look, you keep thinking about it, and you see it again. And you're like, there's no doubt it's beautiful. The imagery is second to none. The moments with Kylo and Rey and Luke standing across from each other with their lightsabers is just incredible. But you're just like, once you know that's a projection, it just doesn't mean as much. Yeah. And it sucks. So
to touch on those two points in the throne room, I was really watching that particularly last night, and I still got chills when he called the lightsaber back towards him and Rey caught it. I mean, that moment,
it is so cool. It
still
so cool.
Gives me chills. Right. I am not in the same place with that as you are. And we've talked about this before. Where I kind of understand within the scope of what they were already doing, I kind of understand why he teamed up with her in that moment and then, you know, like turned again, because his mind, where he had conflict and then resolve in that particular moment was he's resolved to becoming the supreme leader, and he thinks Rey is going to turn with him. So that's kind of his plan. And that sort of does pay off in the end in that last look between them, because he's got some attachment to her, some sort of feelings there, which are, you know, going to transit, or we're going to see that play out in episode 9, I'm sure. But with the moment with Luke, last night watching it again, chills from head to toe. Like when Luke is walking out that hole, you're like, oh my God, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, what? You know, you sit up in your seat, you set the popcorn down, you know, like you get ready. I understand 100% everyone's problem with it being a projection. And to be honest, I'm still not sure where I land on it. If Luke was there, it would be unquestionably better. Period. Because the stakes go up, and in anything where the stakes go up, it's going to end up meaning more. In the end, with him being a projection and the way he signed off, you know, see you later, kid. And he tucked his head down like Obi-Wan. I was cool with that. But when he collapsed onto the rock, I felt like he should have just disappeared. I feel like his body should have disappeared then. And that should have been the end of Luke. I'm not big on that big hero moment, the climb back up on the rock and then look at the sun and fade away. To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm really not sure why they did that.
Oh, they did that for the Tatooine. I mean, you know, the Force moment in A New Hope. It was like, I mean,
the parallel there.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Which I get, but you know, like I said, I feel like, if you want to sell the fact that Luke just sacrificed himself to me, it makes more sense that when his projection fades away, he has exhausted himself through the force. It killed him to do that, and he collapses and dies. Boom. And to me, that's a better ending, but that's, you know,
yeah,
that's neither here nor there. If Luke had been on Crait, it would have been more powerful.
Definitely. I don't want to spend, we were running pretty late on time, but I do want to kind of get into just where does The Last Jedi rank for you with all the Star Wars movies? First of all, just go ahead and give your, if you want to say where your favorites, what your favorites are, and then where does Last Jedi rank?
Yeah. So for me, my favorite Star Wars movies are going to be Episode 7, number one.
You're objectively wrong, by the way, but that's okay.
No, that's all right. We'll talk about that later. I'm not on here to be, you know, ostracized and all these throw a lot of big other big words at you to show you're wrong. But so Episode 7 for me is personally my favorite, and I understand.
And this is a completely subjective list, so we're not arguing what's best and all
subjectively,
that.
Subjectively
so.
Subjective list. I won't go through the whole list. I'll just go through like the top few and then the last few. So the top few: The Force Awakens, Empire Strikes Back, and then A New Hope. Probably followed right up by Episode 3. So I won't go through the whole thing, like I said, but the last few are going to be Episode 2. And I struggle with these last ones more than the first few, honestly, because Episode 2, if I put it last and then put Episode 1, Rogue One and The Last Jedi, so that would be kind of like the end of the list, would be Rogue One, Last Jedi, Episode 1, Episode 2. I still struggle with that because Episode 1 and 2, they mean so much, and I feel bad for doing it, but you know, objectively to me, that's probably where they are. It's just at the bottom of the list above Episode 1 and 2.
So I have Empire number 1, and it's mm-hmm. probably never going anywhere. Force Awakens 2, A New Hope 3, Revenge of the Sith is 4, Return of the Jedi 5. And then this is where it gets dicey, because we're left with my bottom four. And I am a prequel defender, as you are. But we both acknowledge the Episode 1 and 2 really have some problems. And of course, yeah. I mean, it's not, you just can't ignore it. But on a Star Wars level, just in terms of how they make me feel in terms of Star Wars moving forward, and I will say, and this is not a excuse for the prequels by any means, but watching the Clone Wars TV series does substantially make the prequels better for me.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But no movie should have to rely on outside media to make it better. So that's kind of irrelevant. It's
unfair.
Right. But the Clone Wars doesn't improve the prequels for me substantially. And so I've got Episode 1 at number 6, Episode 2 at number 7, Rogue One at 8, and Episode 8 at 9. So Episode 8 is my least favorite. Episode 8 is my least favorite Star Wars movie. I don't think it's the worst Star Wars movie in terms of being objective and how entertaining it is. Just for me, subjectively, and this is where people get mixed up with what subjective versus objective means. It means that on a fan level, completely subjective, I think The Last Jedi is last. Objectively, it's an extremely well-made film. And I don't really think, if you're looking at it with no bias, I don't think you can argue that The Last Jedi is a well-made film. I really don't. You can argue it's a terrible Star Wars movie, as I have, but it's still a really well-made film, and it's very entertaining.
Yeah.
So moving forward, I mean, there's still a lot to look forward to with Star Wars, and I've mentioned this a few times in my videos, but I have gone back and started watching The Clone Wars again, and The Clone Wars is phenomenal in every aspect. Tommy just started watching The Clone Wars for the first time.
Yeah, I'm in Episode 2 now. I mean, Season 2, and I've watched it here and there over the years, but never did an intentional watch through, but I've finally committed to that, so.
It's great. It's so great. I have not watched Rebels all the way through yet, but I will be getting into Rebels, and I just recently purchased the Ahsoka novel. And so once I get done with my rewatch of the Clone Wars, I'll listen to the Ahsoka novel, and then I'll move into Rebels. And then, but I'm still generally excited about Star Wars. I'm just nowhere near where I was. I'm a huge Walt Disney World fan, as Tommy is. We love Disney parks, and Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is currently being developed in Anaheim and in Orlando. That's the most exciting thing right now in the Star Wars universe, and it always has been, to know that we're going to be able to walk into a Star Wars theme park, not necessarily a theme park, but a Star Wars land inside of a theme park.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I truly can't wait. And the fact that J.J. Abrams is still on board for episode 9, and J.J. is one of my favorite producers, filmmakers, writers of all time. J.J. produced my single favorite television show, which is Lost. I've loved every movie he's touched. So I have a lot of faith in J.J. I do feel like J.J. is going to retcon a lot of things that happened in 8. I don't think he's going to retcon Snoke or Luke, because I think that's kind of beyond retconning. But yeah, I do think he's going to retcon some things. We will see. Maybe he won't. Maybe him and Ryan were completely on the same page and we just don't know what the hell we're talking about. But it does feel like a lot of the Force Awakens was kind of ignored in episode 8. So we'll see. Now, how do you feel moving forward about Star Wars?
You know, I feel the same in a lot of ways. I would say that for me, moving forward, The Last Jedi will probably drop more than anything, you know, because you do get more of a Star Wars feel when you watch the prequels than you do when you watch The Last Jedi, because it just feels like an isolated movie. It's a well-made, great movie in and of its own, but it doesn't forward the story in that Star Wars feeling way that we set out on with The Force Awakens. But with that said, like I said, there's so much to be excited for. There's always some sort of new media coming out, some sort of a new material to digest as a Star Wars fan, including the physical experience of going to the theme parks. You know, with JJ on board, I couldn't be more excited. I remember when he got announced, even before The Last Jedi came out, you know, we talked, and I don't remember if it was you or if it was, you know, articles that we were discussing at the time, but it's kind of the thought was, well, I'm surprised they didn't bring Ryan back for 9. Like, that's kind of weird. And I remember, I was 100% sold on it from the moment I heard it. I was so excited because I wanted that. I wanted JJ to come back and finish out this trilogy and just to have that feel. And now, even more than ever, I'm glad that he is coming back. You know, there's a lot of promise. I do feel like he will probably retcon a few things. I feel like maybe, I'm hoping we may get a little bit more explanation on Snoke in retrospect. You know, some of the things I think that we may see retconned are going to be Phasma's death. You know, maybe there's some sort of explanation there, and I haven't read the novel, so I don't know the magnitude of her eye being exposed and falling into fire like that. But I mean, there's been crazier things explained in Star Wars than somebody falling into a pit of fire and surviving.
That is true.
So somehow or another, I think we may see something on that. Maybe not. It just seems like such a waste of a character. But you know, like I said, I could be wrong. The other thing I'm not sure if we've landed in our final placement on is, you know, Rey's lineage. You know, was that something that she agreed with Kylo on to kind of hide what she knows, or is she going to find out something herself? Were those just, you know, parents that were adopted or she got dropped off on? Like, I don't know. It seems super odd that we have someone rising within the light. The person that's rising within the light at that strength is not in any way, shape, or form related to the Skywalker family, because that's what Star Wars has always been about. So maybe we'll see something different there, maybe not. But you know, there's plenty of other things that he could retcon as well. I won't go into all of them, but I think that whatever he does is going to be great, or has the potential to be great, because he's a character guy, and that's what we need. That's what Star Wars is. It's about characters, and that's what we saw in The Force Awakens. We got so many great new characters, and now we have the guy that gave us those great new characters coming back to close out the story on those great new characters, and that is exciting in and of itself. So I can now, like I said earlier in the podcast, go into the Star Wars movie, go into The Last Jedi and watch it and start to try to appreciate it just for what it is, because I know that there's so much promise on the future, on the horizon. I can appreciate just The Last Jedi is going to be here in this story, and it's going to be a stopgap probably between episode 7 and 9. And that's okay, because I've still got episode 9 to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, and it sounds like you've got a little bit more optimistic approach than I do. And not that I'm not like, you know, super sour or anything, but I definitely think you've got a little bit better optimism than I do, which is good. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have a lot more optimism than I do, and even you. And there's a lot of people that don't have, that have a lot less optimism. There clearly is, because they're being right, very vocal. And but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I can speak for both of us to say that neither one of us hates Star Wars. I made a video a few weeks ago, about a month ago, when JJ was announced for episode 9, and all the stupid fanboys were making claims like JJ is a terrible director. And I was like, you people are complete idiots. And I made a video where it was titled "Nobody Hates Star Wars More Than Star Wars Fans." And it's true. I mean, they, you know, we're complaining about The Last Jedi, and that's because we both have problems with it, and I'm going to acknowledge that. But I mean, we're talking about Star Wars fans that ran George Lucas out of George Lucas, like, yeah. You ran George Lucas, yeah, out of Star Wars, because you just can't be happy. And so, when JJ was announced, I still, at that point, that was way prior to seeing The Last Jedi, and I still wanted Rian Johnson on at that point. In retrospect, I'm glad he's not, and I'd still, you know, I made the prediction that I do think Disney's going to pull Rian from that trilogy based on the reaction to The Last Jedi. I may be wrong. Yeah. I mean, time will tell. But we shall see. But ultimately, I'm always going to be excited because it's Star Wars. I hope that they look at things and really try to take what the fans are saying into serious consideration. That's kind of hard because Star Wars fans have almost turned into the boy that cried wolf at this point, and it's hard to take them seriously when they're complaining, because they complain about everything. But we shall see. But that's going to do it for this week's episode of Geek Pulse Radio Prime. I do appreciate Tommy joining me for this week's episode. And you know, Tommy, do you have any closing thoughts or a shout out or anything you want to give before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, I give a shout out to my sons, Colton and Landon. They think it's funny that their old dad's doing podcasting. So I'll give a shout out to them. But, 14 and 12, I'm the big old, nerdy guy doing stuff. So, it is a lot of fun. It's always fun to talk about Star Wars. Lots of cool stuff coming our way. Hopefully Disney hears some of the backlash on some of the things that people are really unhappy about, which is just kind of inserting characters without, thought to how that's going to affect the story. At the end of the day, I feel like all Star Wars fans really just want a great story. And when you're a true Star Wars fan and you love everything about that universe, you just want a good story, and that's it. And it doesn't matter who's in that story, who's telling that story. If it fits and it works and it's good storytelling, then we're on board.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And before we close this out, I just want to let everyone know that Geek Pulse Radio, we have a lot of cool content coming your way. We have recently switched from SoundCloud as our hosting source, and we've moved over to Podbean. We obviously still have the Geek Pulse Gaming Podcast. We have the Sports Wars Podcast, where we talk about football, baseball, basketball, everything sports. We talk a lot of smack. So if you're part of our Sports Wars group, you already know that. And we do have a few other shows we are working on developing for the future. So please stay tuned. Subscribe to Geek Pulse Radio on iTunes or any third-party apps that you're using on Android. We look forward to having more discussions with you. I hope you all enjoyed this video, and we will be back every week here on Geek Pulse Radio Prime to bring you a wide variety of discussions. So for Tommy, I'm Jeremy. Thank you to the geeksandgamers.com community. Have a great day, everyone.